He is what he is, she repeated firmly. But I must keep him alive if he is to do anything. He will fulfill no prophecies dead, and even if he manages to avoid Dark Friends and Shadow Spawn, there are 1,000 other hands ready to slay him. All it will take is a hint of the 100th part of what he is. Yet if that were all he might face, I would not worry half so much as I do. There are the Forsaken to be accounted for.
Perrin gave a start. From the corner, Loyal moaned. The Dark One and all the Forsaken are bound in Sheol Ghul, Perrin began by rote, but she gave him no time to finish.
The seals are weakening, Perrin. Some are broken, though the world does not know that. Must not know that. The Father of Lies is not free, yet. But as the seals weaken, more and more, which of the Forsaken may be loosed already? Lanfear, Samael, Asmodian, or Belal, or Ravin? Is Shamael himself the betrayer of hope? There were 13 altogether, Perrin, and bound in the ceiling, not in the prison that holds the Dark One. 13 of the most powerful Aes Sedai of the Age of Legends. The weakest of them, stronger than the 10 strongest Aes Sedai living today. The most ignorant with all the knowledge of the Age of Legends. And every man and woman of them gave up the light and dedicated their souls to the shadow. What if they are free and out there waiting for him? I will not let them have him.
Perrin shivered, partly from the icy iron in her last words and partly from the thought of the Forsaken. He did not want to think of even one of the Forsaken loose in the world. His mother had frightened him with those names when he was little.
Ishamael comes for boys who do not tell their mothers the truth. Lanfear waits in the night for boys who do not go to bed when they are supposed to.
Being older did not help, not when he knew now they were all real, not when Moraine said they might be free.
Bound in Sheol Ghul, he whispered, and wished he still believed it.
Troubled, he studied Rand's letter again.
Dreams. He was talking about dreams yesterday, too.
Moraine stepped closer and peered up into his face.
Dreams?
Lan and Uno came in, but she waved them to silence. The small room was more than crowded now, with 5 people in it besides the Ogier.
What dreams have you had the last few days, Perrin?
She ignored his protest that there was nothing wrong with his dreams.
Tell me, she insisted. What dream have you had that was not ordinary? Tell me.
Her gaze seized him like smithy tongs, willing him to speak. He looked at the others. They were all watching him fixedly, even Min. Then hesitantly told of the one dream that seemed unusual to him, the dream that came every night, the dream of the sword he could not touch. He did not mention the wolf that had appeared in the last.
Kalandor, Lan breathed when he was done.
Rock-hard face or no, he looked stunned.
Yes, Moraine said. But we must be absolutely certain. Speak to the others.
As Lan hurried out, she turned to Uno.
And what of your dreams? Did you dream of a sword, too?
The Shinaran shifted his feet. The red eye painted on his patch stared straight at Moraine, but his real eye blinked and wavered.
I dream about about swords all the time, Moraine Sedai, he said stiffly. I suppose I've dreamed about a sword the last few nights. I don't remember my dreams the way Lord Perrin here does.
Moraine said,
Loyal?
My dreams are always the same, Moraine Sedai. The groves and the great trees and the steading. We Ogier always dream of the steading when we are away from them.
The Aes Sedai turned back to Perrin.
It was just a dream, he said. Nothing but a dream. I doubt it, she said. You describe the hall called the Heart of the Stone, in the fortress called the Stone of Tyr, as if you had stood in it. And the shining sword is Kalandor, the sword that is not a sword, the sword that cannot be touched.
Loyal sat up straight, bumping his head on the roof. He did not seem to notice.
The prophecies of the dragon say the Stone of Tyr will never fall till Kalandor is wielded by the dragon's hand. The fall of the Stone of Tyr will be one of the greatest signs of the dragon's rebirth. If Rand holds Kalimdor, the whole world must acknowledge him as the dragon.
Perhaps. The word floated from the Aes Sedai's lips like a shard of ice on still water.
Perhaps, Perrin said. Perhaps. I thought that was the final sign, the last thing to fulfill your prophecies.
Neither the first nor the last, Moraine said. Kalimdor will be but one fulfillment of the Kuriathon cycle, as his birth on the slopes of Dragonmount was the first. He has yet to break the nations or shatter the world. Even scholars who have studied the prophecies for their entire lives do not know how to interpret them all. What does it mean that he shall slay his people with the sword of peace and destroy them with the leaf? What does it mean that he shall bind the nine moons to serve him? Yet these are given equal weight with Kalimdor in the cycle. There are others. What wounds of madness and cutting of hope has he healed? What chains has he broken? And who put into chains? And some are so obscure that he may already have fulfilled them, although I am not aware of it. But no, Kalimdor is far from the end of it.
Perrin shrugged uneasily. He knew only bits and pieces of the prophecies. He had liked hearing them even less since Rand had let Moraine put that banner in his hands. No, it had been before that, even. Since a journey by Portal Stone had convinced him, his life was bound to Rand's. Moraine was continuing.
If you think he has simply to put out his hand, loyal son of Arendt, son of Holland, you are a fool, as is he if he thinks it. Even if he lives to reach Tyr, he may never attain the stone. Tyrans have no love for the One Power, unless for any man claiming to be the dragon. Channeling is outlawed, and Aes Sedai are tolerated at best, so long as they do not channel. Telling the prophecies of the dragon, or even possessing a copy of them, is enough to put you in prison in Tyr. And no one enters the Stone of Tyr without permission of the High Lords. None but the High Lords themselves enter the heart of the stone. He is not ready for this. Not ready.
Perrin grunted softly. The stone would never fall till the dragon reborn held Kalimdor.
How in the light is he supposed to reach it, inside a bloody fortress, before the fortress falls? It is madness. Why are we just sitting here? Min burst out. If Rand is going to Tyr, why aren't we following him? He could be killed or... Why are we sitting here?
Moraine put a hand on Min's head.
Because I must be sure, she said gently. It is not comfortable being chosen by the wheel to be great or to be near greatness. The chosen of the wheel can only take what comes.
I am tired of taking what comes,
Min scrubbed a hand across her eyes. Perrin thought he saw tears.
Rand could be dying while we wait.
Moraine smoothed Min's hair. There was a look almost of pity on the Aes Sedai's face. Perrin sat down on the end of Land's bed opposite Loyal. The smell of people was thick in the room, people and worry and fear. Loyal smelled of books and trees as well as worry. It felt like a trap with the walls around them and all so close. The burning slivers stank.
How can my dream tell where Rand is going? He asked. It was my dream.
Those who can channel the One Power, Moraine said quietly, those who are particularly strong in spirit can sometimes force their dreams on others.
She did not stop her soothing of men, especially on those who are susceptible.
I do not believe Rand did it on purpose, but the dreams of those touching the true source can be powerful. For one as strong as he, they could possibly seize an entire village, or perhaps even a city. He knows little of what he does, and even less of how to control it.
Then why didn't you have it too? He demanded. Or Lan?
Uno stared straight ahead, looking as if he would rather be anywhere else, and Loyal's ears wilted. Perrin was too tired and too hungry to care whether he showed proper respect for an Aes Sedai. And too hungry as well, he realized.
Why?
Moraine answered calmly.
Aes Sedai learn to shield their dreams. I do it without thinking when I sleep. Warders are given something much the same in the bonding.
The Gaidin could not do what they must if the shadow could steal into their dreams. We are all vulnerable when we sleep, and the shadow is strong in the night.
There's always something new from you, Perrin growled. Can't you tell us what to expect once in a while, instead of explaining after it happens?
Una looked as though he was trying to think of a reason to leave. Moraine gave Perrin a flat look.
You want me to share a lifetime of knowledge with you in a single afternoon? Or even a single year? I will tell you this. Be wary of dreams, Perrin Ibarra. Be very wary of dreams.
He pulled his eyes away from hers.
I am, he murmured. I am.
After that, silence, and no one seemed to want to break it. Min sat staring at her crossed ankles, but apparently taking some comfort from Moraine's presence. Una stood against the wall, not looking at anyone. Loyal forgot himself enough to pull a book from his coat pocket and try to read in the dim light. The wait was long and far from easy for Perrin.
It's not the shadow in my dreams I'm afraid of. It's wolves. I will not let them in. I won't.
Lan returned and Moraine straightened eagerly. The warder answered the question in her eyes.
Half of them remembered dreaming of swords the last four nights running. Some remember a place with great columns, and five say the sword was crystal or glass. Massima says he saw Rand holding it last night.
That one would, Moraine said. She rubbed her hands together briskly. She seemed suddenly full of energy.
Now I am certain, though I still wish I knew how he left here unseen. If he has rediscovered some talent from the Age of Legends...
Land looked at Uno, and the one-eyed man shrugged in dismay.
I bloody forgot with all this flaming talk about blood.
He cleared his throat, shooting a glance at Moraine. She looked back expectantly, and he went on.
I followed the Lord Dragon's tracks. There's another way into that closed valley now. The earthquake brought down the far wall. It's a hard climb, but you can get a horse up it. I found more tracks at the top, and there's an easy way from there around the mountain.
He let out a long breath when he was done.
Good, Moraine said. At least he has not rediscovered how to fly, or make himself invisible, or something else out of legend. We must follow him without delay. Uno, I will give you enough gold to take you and the others as far as Jahanna, and the name of someone there who will see that you get more. The Gil Aldanin are wary of strangers, but if you keep to yourselves, they should not trouble you. Wait there until I send word.
But we will go with you, he protested. We have all sworn to follow the Dragon Reborn. I do not see how the few of us can take a fortress that has never fallen, but with the Lord Dragon's aid, we will do what must be done.
So we are the people of the dragon now, Perrin laughed mirthlessly.
The Stone of Tyr will never fall till the people of the dragon come. Have you given us a new name, Moraine?
Watch your tongue, blacksmith, Lan growled, all ice and stone. Moraine gave them both sharp looks, and they fell silent.
Forgive me, Uno, she said, but we must travel quickly if we are to have a hope of overtaking him. You are the only Shinaran fit enough for a hard ride, and we cannot afford the days the others will need to regain full strength. I will send for you when I can.
Uno grimaced, but he bowed in acquiescence. At her dismissal, he squared his shoulders and left to tell the others.
Well, I am going anyway, whatever you say, Min put in firmly. You are going to Tar Valon, Moraine told her.
I am no such thing!
The Aes Sedai went on smoothly as if the other woman had not spoken.
The Amarlin Seat must be told what has happened, and I cannot count on finding one I can trust who has messenger pigeons. Or that the Amarlin will see any message I send by pigeon. It is a long journey and hard. I would not send you alone if there were anyone to send with you. But I will see you have money and letters to those who might help you on your way. You must ride quickly, though. When your horse tires, buy another, or steal one if you must. But ride quickly.
Let Uno take your message. He's fit, you said so. I'm going after Rand.
Uno has his duties, Min. And do you think a man could simply walk up to the gates of the White Tower and demand an audience with the Amarlin Seat? Even a king would be made to wait days if he arrived unannounced.
and I fear any of the Shinarans would be left kicking their heels for weeks, if not forever. Not to mention that something so unusual would be known to everyone in Tarvalen before the first sunset. Few women seek audiences with the Ammerlin herself, but it does happen, and it should occasion no great comment. No one must learn even as much as that the Ammerlin has received a message from me. Her life and ours could depend on it. You are the one who must go. Min sat there opening and closing her mouth, obviously searching for another argument, but Moraine had already gone on. Lan, I very much fear we will find more evidence of his passing than I would like, but I will rely on your tracking. The warder nodded. Perrin, Loyal, will you come with me after Rand? From her place against the wall, Min gave an indignant squawk, but the Aes Sedai ignored it.
I will come, Loyal said quickly. Rand is my friend, and I will admit it. I would not miss anything. For my book, you see.
Perrin was slower to answer. Rand was his friend, whatever he had become in the forging. And there was that near certainty of their futures being linked, though he would have avoided that part of it if he could. It has to be done, doesn't it? He said finally. I will come. Good. Moraine rubbed her hands together again, with the air of someone settling to work. You must all ready yourselves at once. Rand has hours on us. I mean to be well along his trail before midday. Slender as she was, the force of her presence herded all of them but Lan toward the door, Loyal walking stooped over until he was through the doorway. Perrin thought of a good wife herding geese. Once outside, Min hung back for a moment to address Lan with a too sweet smile. And is there any message you want carried? To Nynaeve, perhaps? The warder blinked as if caught off guard, like a horse on three legs.
Does everyone know?
He regained his balance almost immediately.
If there is anything else she needs to hear from me, I will tell her myself.
He closed the door nearly in her face.
Men, Min muttered at the door. Too blind to see what a stone could see, and too stubborn to be trusted to think for themselves.
Perrin inhaled deeply. Faint smells of death still hung in the valley air, but it was better than the closeness inside. Some better.
Clean air, Loyal sighed. The smoke was beginning to bother me a little.
They started down the slope together. Beside the stream below, the Shinarans, who could stand, were gathered around Uno. From his gestures, the one-eyed man was making up for lost time with his cursing.
How did you two become privileged? Min demanded abruptly. She asked you. She didn't do me the courtesy of asking.
Loyal shook his head.
I think she asked because she knew what we would answer, Min. Moraine seems able to read Perrin and me. She knows what we'll do. But you are a closed book to her.
Min appeared only a little mollified. She looked up at them, Perrin head and shoulders taller on one side, and Loyal towering even higher on the other.
Much good it does me. I'm still going where she wants as easily as you two little lambs. You were doing well for a while, Perrin, standing up to her like she'd sold you a coat and the seams were popping open.
I did stand up to her, didn't I? Perrin said wonderingly.
He had not really realized he had done that. It was not so bad as I'd have thought it would be.
You were lucky, Loyal rumbled. To anger an Aes Sedai is to put your head in a hornet's nest.
Loyal, Min said. I need to speak to Perrin. Alone. Would you mind?
Oh, of course not.
He lengthened his stride to its normal span and quickly moved ahead of them, pulling his pipe and tobacco pouch from a coat pocket. Perrin eyed her warily. She was biting her lip as if considering what to say.
Do you ever see things about him?
He asked, nodding after the Ogier.
She shook her head. I think it only works with humans, but I've seen things around you that you ought to know about.
I've told you.
Don't be more thick-headed than you have to be, Perrin. Back there, right after you said you'd go? They were not there before. They must have to do with this journey, or at least with you deciding to go.
After a moment, he said reluctantly,
What did you see?
An Aielman in a cage, she said promptly. A Duathwan with a sword. a falcon and a hawk perching on your shoulders. Both female, I think. And all the rest, of course. What is always there. Darkness swirling round you and...
None of that, he said quickly.
When he was sure she had stopped, he scratched his head thinking. None of it made any sense to him.
Do you have any idea what it all means?
The new things, I mean. No, but they're important.
The things I see always are. Turning points in people's lives or what's fated. It's always important. She hesitated for a moment, glancing at him.
One more thing, she said slowly. If you meet a woman, the most beautiful woman you've ever seen, run.
Perrin blinked.
You saw a beautiful woman?
Why should I run from a beautiful woman?
Can't you just take advice? She said irritably.
She kicked at a stone and watched it roll down the slope. Perrin did not like jumping to conclusions. It was one of the reasons some people thought him slow-witted. But he totaled up a number of things Min had said in the last few days and came to a startling conclusion. He stopped dead, hunting for words.
Min, you know I like you. I like you, but, you sort of remind me of my sisters. I mean, you...
The flow stumbled to a halt as she raised her head to look at him, eyebrows arched. She wore a small smile.
Why, Perrin, you must know that I love you.
She stood there, watching his mouth work, then spoke slowly and carefully.
Like a brother, you great wooden-headed lummox. The arrogance of men never ceases to amaze me. You all think everything has to do with you, and every woman has to desire you.
Perrin felt his face growing hot.
I didn't.
He cleared his throat.
What did you see about a woman?
Just take my advice, she said,
and started down toward the stream again, walking fast.
If you forget all the rest, she called over her shoulder, heed that.
He frowned after her. For once his thoughts seemed to arrange themselves quickly, then caught up in two strides.
It's Rand, isn't it?
She made a sound in her throat and gave him a sidelong look. She did not slow down, though.
Maybe you weren't so boneheaded after all, she muttered.
After a moment, she added, as if to herself,
I'm bound to him as surely as a stave is bound to a barrel. But I can't see if he'll ever love me in return. And I'm not the only one.
Does Egwene know? He asked. Rand and Egwene had been all but promised since childhood. Everything but kneeling in front of the women's circle of the village to speak the betrothal. He was not sure how far they had drifted from that, if at all.
She knows, Min said curtly. Much good it does either of us.
What about Rand? Does he know?
Oh, of course, she said bitterly. I told him, didn't I? Rand, I did a viewing of you, and it seems I have to fall in love with you. I have to share you, too, and I don't much like that, but there it is. You're a wooden-headed wonder after all, Perrin Ebarra.
She dashed a hand across her eyes angrily.
If I could be with him, I know I could help. Somehow.
Light, if he dies, I don't know if I can stand it.
Perrin shrugged uncomfortably.
Listen, Min, I'll do what I can to help him, however much that is. I promise you that. It really is best for you to go to Tarvalin. You'll be safe there.
Safe?
She tasted the word as if wondering what it meant.
You think Tarvalin is safe?
If there's no safety in Tarvalin, there's no safety anywhere.
She sniffed loudly, and in silence they went to join those preparations to leave. Chapter 7 The Way Out of the Mountains. The way down out of the mountains was hard, but the lower they went, the less Perrin needed his fur-lined cloak. Hour by hour they rode out of the tailings of winter and into the first days of spring. The last remnants of snow vanished, and grasses and wildflowers, white maiden's hope and pink jump-up, began to cover the high meadows they crossed. Trees appeared more often, with more leaves, and grass larks and robins sang in the branches. And there were wolves. Never in sight, not even Lan mentioned seeing one, but Perrin knew. He kept his mind firmly closed to them, yet now and again a featherlight tickle at the back of his mind reminded him they were there. Lan spent most of his time scouting their path on his black warhorse Mondarb, following Rand's tracks as the rest of them followed the signs the warder left for them. An arrow of stones laid on the ground, or one lightly scratched in the rock wall of a forking pass. Turn this way, cross that saddle pass, take this switchback, this deer trail, this way through the trees and down along a narrow stream, even though there is nothing to indicate anyone has ever gone that way before. Nothing but land signs. A tuft of grass or weeds tied one way to say bare left, another for bare right. A bent branch. A pile of pebbles for a rough climb ahead. Two leaves caught on a thorn for a steep descent. The warder had 100 signs, it seemed to Perrin, and Moraine knew them all. Lan rarely came back except when they made camp to confer with Moraine quietly, away from the fire. When the sun rose, most often he was hours gone already. Moraine was always first into the saddle after him, while the eastern sky was just turning pink. The Aes Sedai would not have climbed down from Aldeeb, her white mare, until full dark or later, except that Lan refused to track further once the light began to fail. "We'll go even slower if a horse breaks a leg," the warder would tell Moraine when she complained. Her reply was always very much the same.
"If you cannot move any faster than this, perhaps I should send you off to Myrella before you get any older. Well, perhaps that can wait, but you must move us faster."
She half sounded as if the threat were irritated truth, half as if she were making a joke. There was something of a threat in it, or maybe a warning, Perrin was sure, from the way Lan's mouth tightened, even when she smiled afterwards and reached up to pat his shoulder soothingly.
"Who is Myrella?"
Perrin asked suspiciously the first time it happened. Loyal shook his head, murmuring something about unpleasant things happening to those who pried into Aes Sedai affairs. The Ogier's hairy fetlocked horse was as tall and heavy as a Durin stallion, but with Loyal's long legs dangling to either side, the animal looked undersized, like a large pony. Moraine gave an amused, secretive smile.
"Just a green sister. Someone to whom Lan must one day deliver a package for safekeeping."
"No day soon," Lan said,
and surprisingly, there was open anger in his voice.
"Never, if I can help it. You will outlive me long, Moraine Aes Sedai."
She has too many secrets, Perrin thought, but asked no more about a subject that could crack the warder's iron self-control. The Aes Sedai had a blanket-wrapped bundle tied behind her saddle, the dragon banner. Perrin was uneasy about having it with them, but Moraine had neither asked his opinion nor listened when he offered it. Not that anyone was likely to recognize it if he saw it, yet he hoped she was as good at keeping secrets from other people as she was at keeping them from him. In the beginning, at least, it was a boring journey. One cloud-capped mountain was very much like another, one pass little different from the next. Supper was usually rabbit, dropped by stones from Perrin's sling. He did not have so many arrows as to risk shooting at rabbits in that rocky country. Breakfast was cold rabbit, more often than not, and the midday meal the same, eaten in the saddle. Sometimes when they camped near a stream and there was still light enough to see, he and Loyal caught mountain trout, lying on their bellies, hands elbow deep in the cold water, tickling the green-backed fish out from under the rock ledges where they hid. Loyal's fingers, big as they were even more deft at it than Perrin's. Once, 3 days after setting out, Moraine joined them, stretching herself out on the stream side and undoing rows of pearl buttons to roll up her sleeves as she asked how the thing was done. Perrin exchanged surprised looks with Loyal. The Ogier shrugged.
"It is not that hard, really," Perrin told her. "Just bring your hand up from behind the fish and underneath, as if you're trying to tickle its belly. Then you pull it out. It takes practice, though. You might not catch anything the first few times you try."
"I tried for days before I ever caught anything," Loyal added.
He was already easing his huge hands into the water, careful to keep his shadow from scaring the fish.
"As difficult as that," Moraine murmured.
Her hands slipped into the water, and a moment later came out with a splash, holding a fat trout that thrashed the surface. She laughed with delight as she tossed it up onto the bank. Perrin blinked at the big fish flopping in the fading sunlight. It must have weighed at least 5 pounds.
"You were very lucky," he said.
Trout that size don't often shelter under a ledge this small. We'll have to move upstream a bit. It will be dark before any of them settle under this ledge again.
Is that so? Moraine said. You two go ahead. I think I will just try here again.
Perrin hesitated a moment before moving up the bank to another overhang. She was up to something, but he could not imagine what. That troubled him. Belly down and careful not to let his shadow fall on the water, he peered over the edge. Half a dozen slender shapes hung suspended in the water, barely moving a fin to hold their places. All of them together would not weigh as much as Moraine's fish, he decided with a sigh. If they were lucky, he and Loyal might take two apiece, but the shadows of trees in the far bank already stretched across the water. Whatever they caught now would be it, and Loyal's appetite was big enough by itself to swallow those four, and most of the bigger fish, too. Loyal's hands were already easing up behind one of the trout. Before Perrin could even slide his hands into the water, Moraine gave a shout.
Three should be enough, I think. The last two are bigger than the first.
Perrin gave Loyal a startled look. She can't have. The Ogier straightened, sending the small trout scattering.
She is Aes Sedai, he said simply.
Sure enough, when they returned to Moraine, three big trout lay on the bank. She was already buttoning her sleeves up again. Perrin thought about reminding her that whoever took the fish was supposed to clean them too, but just at that moment she caught his eye. There was no particular expression on her smooth face, but her dark eyes did not waver, and they appeared to know what he was going to say, and to have dismissed it out of hand already. When she turned away, it seemed somehow too late to say anything. Muttering to himself, Perrin pulled out his belt knife and set to gutting and heading. All of a sudden, she's forgotten about sharing the chores, it seems. I suppose she'll want us to do the cooking as well, and the cleaning up after.
No doubt she will,
Loyal said, without pausing over the fish he was working on.
She is Aes Sedai.
I seem to remember hearing that somewhere. Perrin's knife ripped into the fish. The Shinarans might have been willing to run around fetching and carrying for her, but there are only four of us now. We should keep on turn and turn about. It's only fair. Loyal gave a great snort of laughter.
I doubt she sees it that way. First she had to put up with Rand arguing with her all the time, and now you're ready to take over for him. As a rule, Aes Sedai do not let anyone argue with them. I expect she means to have us back in the habit of doing what she says by the time we reach the first village.
A good habit to be in, Lan said, throwing back his cloak. In the fading light, he had appeared out of nowhere. Perrin nearly fell over from surprise, and Loyal's ears went stiff with shock. Neither of them had heard the warder's step. A habit you should never have lost, Lan added, then strode off toward Moraine and the horses. His boots barely made a sound, even on that rocky ground, and once he was a few paces away, the cloak hanging down his back gave him the uneasy appearance of a disembodied head and arms drifting up from the stream.
We need her to find Rand, Perrin said softly, but I am not going to let her shape my life any more.
He went back to his cleaning vigorously. He meant to keep that promise, he really did, but during the days that followed, in some way he did not quite understand, he found that he and Loyal were doing the cooking and the cleaning up and any other little chore that Moraine thought of. He even discovered that somehow or other he had taken over tending Uldeeb every night, unsaddling the mare and rubbing her down while Moraine settled herself, apparently deep in thought. Loyal gave in to it as inevitable, but not Perrin. He tried refusing, resisting. But it was hard to resist when she made a reasonable suggestion, and a small one at that. Only there was always another suggestion behind it, as reasonable and small as the first, and then another. The simple force of her presence, the strength of her gaze, made it difficult to protest. Her dark eyes would catch his at the moment he opened his mouth. A lift of her eyebrow to suggest he was being rude, a surprised widening of her eyes, that he could object to so small a request, a level stare that held in it everything that was Aes Sedai, all these things could make him hesitate. And once he hesitated, there was never any recovering lost ground. He accused her of using the one power on him, though he did not really think that was it, and she told him not to be a fool. He began to feel like a piece of iron trying to stop a smith from hammering it into a scythe. The mountains of mist gave way abruptly to the forested foothills of Gilladan, to land that seemed all up and down, but never very high. Deer, which in the mountains had often watched them warily, as if uncertain what a man was, began to bound away, white tails flickering, at the first sight of the horses. Even Perrin now caught only the faintest glimpses of the gray-striped mountain cats that seemed to fade away like smoke. They were coming into the lands of men. Lan stopped wearing his color-shifting cloak and began riding back to the rest of them more often, telling them what lay ahead. In many places, the trees had all been cut down. Soon fields encircled by rough stone walls and farmers plowing round the sides of hills were common sights, if not exactly frequent, along with lines of people moving across the plowed ground, sowing seed from sacks slung from their shoulders. Scattered farmhouses and barns of gray stone sat on hilltops and ridges. The wolves should not have been there. Wolves avoided places where men were, but Perrin could still sense them, an unseen screen and escort ringing the mounted party. Impatience filled him, impatience to reach a village or a town, any place where there were enough men to make the wolves go away. A day after sighting the first field, just as the sun touched the horizon behind them, they came to the village of Jara, not far north of the border with Amadicia. Chapter 8. Jara. Gray stone houses with slate roofs lay clustered along the few narrow streets of Jara, clinging to a hillside above a little stream spanned by a low wooden bridge. The muddy streets were empty, and so was the sloping village green, except for one man sweeping the steps of the village's only inn, standing beside its stone stable, but it looked as if there had been a good many people on the green not long before. Half a dozen arches woven of green branches and dotted with such few flowers as could be found this early in the year stood in a circle in the middle of the grass. The ground had a trampled look, and there were other signs of a gathering. A woman's red scarf lying tangled at the foot of one of the arches, a child's knitted cap, a pewter pitcher tumbled on its side, a few half-eaten scraps of food. The aromas of sweet wine and spiced cakes clung about the green, mixed in with smoke from dozens of chimneys and evening meals cooking. For an instant, Perrin's nose caught another odor, one he could not identify, a faint trail that raised the hair on the back of his neck with its vileness. Then it was gone. But he was sure something had passed that way, something wrong. He scrubbed at his nose as if to rub away the memory of it. That can't be Rand. Light, even if he has gone mad, that can't be him, can it? A painted sign hung above the inn door, a man standing on one foot with his arms thrown in the air. Harlan's Leap. As they drew rein in front of the square stone building, the sweeper straightened, yawning fiercely. He gave a start at Perrin's eyes, but his own already protruding eyes went wide when they fell on Loyal. With his wide mouth and no chin to speak of, he looked something like a frog. There was an old smell of sour wine about him, to Perrin at least. The fellow had certainly been part of the celebration. The man gave himself a shake and turned it into a bow with one hand resting on the double row of wooden buttons running down his coat. His eyes flickered from one to another of them, popping even more every time they rested on Loyal.
"Welcome, good mistress, and the light illumine your way. Welcome, good masters. You wish food, rooms, baths? All to be had here at the Leap. Master Herod, the innkeeper, keeps a good house. I am called Simeon. If you wish anything, ask for Simeon, and he will get it for you."
He yawned again, covering his mouth in embarrassment and bowing to hide it.
"I beg your pardon, good mistress. You have come far. Have you word of the great hunt? The hunt for the Horn of Valir? Or the false dragon? It's said there's a false dragon in Tarabon. Or maybe Arad-Daman."
"We have not come that far," Lan said, swinging down from his saddle. "No doubt you know more than I." They all began dismounting.
"You have had a wedding here?" Moraine said.
"A wedding, good mistress? Why, we've had a lifetime of weddings, a plague of them, all in the last 2 days. There isn't a woman old enough to speak the betrothal remains unmarried, not in the whole village, not for a mile in any direction. Why, even Widow Jorath dragged old Bonus through the arches, and they'd both sworn they'd never marry again. It was like a whirlwind just snatched everybody up.
Rilith the Weaver's daughter, she started it, asking John the Blacksmith to marry her, and him old enough to be her father and more. The old fool just took off his apron and said yes, and she demanded the arches be put up right then and there. Wouldn't hear of a proper wait, and all the other women sided with her. Since then, we've had marriages day and night. Why, nobody's had any sleep at all, hardly.
That's very interesting, Perrin said when Simeon paused to yawn again. But have you seen a young...
It is very interesting, Moraine said, cutting him off. And I would like to hear more of it later, perhaps. For now, we would like rooms and a meal.
Lan made a small gesture toward Perrin, down low, as if telling him to hold his tongue.
Of course, good mistress. A meal, rooms.
Simeon hesitated, eyeing Loyal.
We'll have to push two beds together for...
He leaned closer to Moraine and dropped his voice.
Pardon, good mistress, but what exactly is he? Meaning no disrespect,
he added hastily. He had not spoken softly enough, for Loyal's ears twitched irritably.
I am an ogre. What did you think I was, a trollic?
Simeon took a step back at the booming voice.
Trollic, good master. Why, I'm a grown man. I don't believe in children's tales. Did you say ogre? Why, ogre are that is...
In desperation, he turned to bellow toward the stable next to the inn.
Nico! Patrim! Visitors! Come see to their horses!
After a moment, two boys with hay in their hair tumbled out of the stable, yawning and rubbing their eyes. Simeon gestured to the steps, bowing as the boys gathered reins. Perrin slung his saddlebags and blanket roll over his shoulder and carried his bow as he followed Moraine and Lan inside, with Simeon bowing and bobbing ahead of them. Loyal had to duck low under the lintel, and the ceiling inside only cleared his head by a foot. He kept rumbling to himself about not understanding why so few humans remembered the ogier. His voice was like distant thunder. Even Perrin, right in front of him, could only understand half of his words. The inn smelled of ale and wine, cheese and weariness, and the aroma of roasting mutton drifted from somewhere in the back. The few men in the common room sagged over their mugs as if they would really like to lie down on the benches and go to sleep. One plump serving woman was drawing a mug of ale from one of the barrels at the end of the room. The innkeeper himself, in a long white apron, sat on a tall stool in the corner, leaning against the wall. As the newcomers entered, he lifted his head, bleary-eyed. His jaw dropped at the sight of Loyal.
"Visitors, Master Herod," Simeon announced. "They want rooms. Master Herod? He's an ogier, Master Herod."
The serving woman turned and saw Loyal and dropped the mug with a clatter. None of the weary men at the tables even looked up. One had put his head down on the table and was snoring. Loyal's ears twitched violently. Master Herod got to his feet slowly, eyes fastened on Loyal, smoothing his apron all the while.
"At least he is in a white cloak," he said at last,
then gave a start as if surprised he had spoken aloud.
"That is to say, welcome, good mistress, good masters. Forgive my lack of manners, I can only plead tiredness, good mistress."
He darted another glance at Loyal and mouthed, "Ogier," with a look of disbelief. Loyal opened his mouth, but Moraine forestalled him.
"As your man said, good innkeeper, I wish rooms for my party for the night and a meal."
"Oh, of course, good mistress, of course. Simeon, show these good people to my best rooms, so they can put down their belongings. I'll have a fine meal laid out for you when you return, good mistress. A fine meal." "If it pleases you to follow me, good mistress," Simeon said. "Good masters."
He bowed the way to stairs at one side of the common room. Behind them, one of the men at the tables suddenly exclaimed,
"What in the name of the light is that?"
Master Herod began explaining about ogier, making it sound as if he were quite familiar with them. Most of what Perrin heard before they left the voices behind was wrong. Loyal's ears twitched without stop. On the second floor, the ogier's head came near to brushing along the ceiling. The narrow corridor was growing dark, with only the sharp light of sunset through a window next to the door at the far end.
"The candles in the rooms, good mistress," Simeon said. "I should have brought a lamp, but my head is still spinning from all those weddings. I'll send someone up to light the fire, if you wish. And you'll want wash water, of course."
He pushed open a door.
"Our best room, good mistress. We don't have many, Not many strangers, you see, but this is our best.
I'll take the one next to it, Lance said. He had Moraine's blanket roll and saddlebags on his shoulder as well as his own, and the bundle containing the dragon banner, too.
Oh, good master, that's not a very good room at all. Narrow bed, cramped, meant for a servant, I suspect, as if we'd ever have anybody here who had a servant. Begging your pardon, good mistress.
I will take it anyway, Lance said firmly.
Simeon, Moraine said, does Master Herod dislike the Children of the Light?
Well, he does, good mistress. He didn't, but he does. It isn't good policy disliking the children, not so close to the border as we are. They come through Jara all the time, like there wasn't any border at all. But there was trouble yesterday, a fistful of trouble. And with the weddings going on and all...
What happened, Simeon?
The man looked at her sharply before answering. Perrin did not think anyone else saw how sharply in the dimness.
There was about 20 of them come day before yesterday. No trouble then. But yesterday... Why, three of them up and announced they weren't Children of the Light anymore. They took off their cloaks and just rode away.
Lan grunted. White cloaks swear for life. What did their commander do?
Why, he must have done something, you can be sure, good master. But another of them announced he was off to find the Horn of Elir. Anyway, still another said they would be hunting the dragon. That one said he was going to Almuth Plain when he left. Then some of them started saying things to women in the streets, things they shouldn't have, and grabbing at them. The women were screaming and children yelling at the ones bothering the women. I never saw such commotion.
Didn't any of you try to stop them? Perrin said.
Good master, you carry that axe like you know how to use it, but it isn't so easy to face up to men with swords and armor and all, when all you know how to use is a broom or a hoe. The rest of the white cloaks, those that hadn't gone off, put an end to it. Almost came to drawn swords, and that wasn't the worst. Two more just went mad, if the others weren't. Those two started raving that Jara was full of dark friends. They tried to burn the village down, said they would, beginning with the leap. You could see the burn marks out back, where they got it started. Fought the other white cloaks when they tried to stop them. The white cloaks that were left, they helped us put it out, tied those two up tight and rode out of here, back toward Amadicia. Good riddance, I say. And if they never come back, it'll be too soon.
Rough behavior, Lance said, even for white cloaks. Simeon bobbed his head in agreement.
As you see, good master. They never acted like that before. Swagger around, yes. Look at you like you were dirt, and poke their noses in where they hadn't any business. But they never caused trouble before. Not like that, anyway.
They are gone now, Moraine said, and troubles with them. I am sure we will pass a quiet night.
Perrin kept his mouth shut, but he was not quiet inside.
All these weddings and white cloaks are all very well, but I'd sooner know if Rand stopped here, and which way he went when he left. That smell couldn't have been him.
He let Simeon guide him on down the hall to another room, with two beds and a washstand, a pair of stools, and not much else. Loyal stooped to put his head through the doorway. Only a little light came in by the narrow windows. The beds were big enough, with blankets and comforters folded at the foot. But the mattresses looked lumpy. Simeon fumbled on the mantel above the fireplace until he found a candle and a tinderbox to get it alight.
I'll see about getting some beds put together for you, good, Ogier. Yes, just a moment now.
He showed no sign of hurry to be about it, though, fussing with the candlestick as if he had to place it just right. Perrin thought he looked uneasy.
Well, I'd be more than uneasy if white cloaks had been acting like that in Emmons Field.
Simeon, has another stranger passed through here in the last day or two? A young man, tall, with gray eyes and reddish hair. He might have played the flute for a meal or a bed.
I remember him, good master,
Simeon said, still shifting the candlestick.
Came yesterday morning early. Looked hungry, he did. He played the flute for all the weddings yesterday. Good-looking fellow. Some of the women eyed him at first, but...
He paused, looking at Perrin sideways.
Is he a friend of yours, good master?
I know him, Perrin said. Why? Simeon hesitated.
No reason, good master. He was an odd fellow, that's all. He talked to himself sometimes, and sometimes he laughed when nobody had said anything. Slept in this very room last night, or part of it. Woke us all in the middle of the night yelling. It was just a nightmare, but he wouldn't stay any longer. Master Herod didn't make much effort to talk him into it, after all that noise.
Simeon paused again.
He said something strange when he left.
What? Perrin demanded.
He said somebody was after him. He said...
The chinless man swallowed and went on more slowly.
Said they'd kill him if he didn't go. One of us has to die, and I mean it to be him. His very words.
He did not mean us,
Loyal rumbled.
We are his friends.
Of course, good O'Gear. Of course he didn't mean you. I don't mean to say anything about a friend of yours, but I think he's sick. In the head, you know.
We will take care of him, Perrin said. That's why we're following him. Which way did he go?
I knew it,
Simeon said, bouncing on his toes.
I knew she could help as soon as I saw you. Which way? East, good master. East, like the Dark One himself was on his heels. Do you think she'll help me? Help my brother, that is. Gnome's bad sick, and Mother Rune says she can't do anything.
Perrin kept his face expressionless and bought a little time to think by propping his bow in the corner and setting his blanket roll and saddlebags on one of the beds. The problem was that thinking did not help much. He looked at Loyal, but found no help there. Consternation had the Ogier's ears drooping and his long eyebrows hanging down on his cheeks. What makes you think she can help your brother?
Stupid question.
The right question is, what does he mean to do about it?
Why, I traveled to Johanna once, good master, and I saw two women like her. I couldn't mistake her after that.
His voice dropped to a whisper.
It said, they can raise the dead, good master.
Who else knows this? Perrin asked sharply, and at the same time Loyal said,
if your brother is dead, there is nothing anyone can do.
The frog-faced man looked from one to the other of them anxiously, and his words came in a babble.
No one knows but me, good master. Gnome isn't dead, good Ogier, only sick. I swear nobody else could recognize her. Even Master Herod's never been more than 20 miles from here in his life. He's so bad sick. I'd ask her myself, only my knees would be shaking so hard she couldn't hear me talk. What if she took offense and called down lightning on me? And what if I'd been wrong?
It isn't the kind of thing you accuse a woman of without... He raised his hands, half in pleading, half as if to defend himself.
I can make no promises, Perrin said, but I'll speak to her.
Loyal, why don't you keep Simeon company till I've spoken to Moraine?
Of course,
the Ogier boomed. Simeon gave a start when Loyal's hand swallowed his shoulder.
He will show me my room and we will talk. Tell me, Simeon, what do you know of trees?
Trees, good Ogier?
Perrin did not wait any longer. He hurried back down the dark hall and knocked on Moraine's door, barely waiting for her peremptory, come, before pushing in. Half a dozen candles showed that the Leap's best room was none too good, though the one bed had four tall posts supporting a canopy, and the mattress looked less full of lumps than Perrin's. There was a scrap of carpet on the floor and two cushioned chairs instead of stools. Other than that, it looked no different from his room. Moraine and Lan stood in front of the cold hearth as if they had been discussing something, and the Aes Sedai did not look pleased at being interrupted. The warder's face was as imperturbable as a carving.
Rand's been here all right,
Perrin started off.
That fellow Simeon remembers him.
Moraine hissed through her teeth.
You were told to keep your mouth shut, Lan growled.
Perrin squared his feet to face the warder. That was easier than facing Moraine's glare.
How could we find out whether he had been here without asking questions? Tell me that.
He left last night, if you are interested, heading east, and he was carrying on about somebody following him trying to kill him.
East,
Moraine nodded. The utter calm of her voice was at odds with her disapproving eyes. That is good to know, though it had to be so if he is going to Tyr. But I was fairly certain he had been here even before I heard about the White Cloaks, and they made it a certainty. Rand is almost surely right about one thing, Perrin. I cannot believe we are the only ones trying to find him. And if they find out about us, they may well try to stop us. We have enough to contend with trying to catch up to Rand without that. You must learn to hold your tongue until I tell you to speak.
The White Cloaks? Perrin said incredulously. Hold my tongue? Burn me if I will.
How could they tell you? Rand's madness. Is it catching?
Not his madness, Moraine said, if he is far enough gone yet to be called mad. Perrin, he is more strongly Tavirin than anyone since the Age of Legends. Yesterday in this village, the pattern moved, shaped itself around him like clay shaped on a mold. The weddings, the White Cloaks, these were enough to say Rand had been here for anyone who knew to listen.
Perrin drew a long breath.
And this is what we'll find everywhere he's been? Light, if there are shadow spawn after him, they can track him as easily as we can.
Perhaps, Moraine said. Perhaps not.
No one knows anything about Tavirin as strong as Rand. For just a moment, she sounded vexed at not knowing. Arthur Hawkwing was the most strongly Tavirin of whom any writings remain, and Hawkwing was in no way as strong as Rand.
It is said, Lan put in, that there were times when people in the same room with Hawkwing spoke truth when they meant to lie, made decisions when they had not even known they were contemplating. Times when every toss of the dice, every turn of the cards, went his way. But only times.
You mean you don't know, Perrin said.
He could leave a trail of weddings and White Cloaks gone mad all the way to Tyr.
I mean I know as much as there is to know, Moraine said sharply. Her dark-eyed gaze chastised Perrin like a whip. The pattern weaves finely around Tavirin, and others can follow the shape of those threads if they know where to look. Be careful your tongue does not unravel more than you can know.
In spite of himself, Perrin hunched his shoulders as if she were delivering real blows.
Well, you had better be glad I opened my mouth this time. Simeon knows your Aes Sedai. He wants you to heal his brother Gnome of some sickness. If I hadn't talked to him, he would never have worked up nerve enough to ask, but he might have started talking among his friends.
Lan caught Moraine's eye, and for a moment they stared at one another. The warder had the air about him of a wolf about to leap. Finally, Moraine shook her head.
No, she said.
As you wish. It is your decision.
Lan sounded as if he thought she had made the wrong one, but the tension left him.
Perrin stared at them.
You were thinking of...
Simeon couldn't tell anyone if he were dead, could he?
He will not die by my actions, Moraine said. But I cannot and will not promise that it will always be so. We must find Rand, and I will not fail in that. Is that spoken plainly enough for you?
Caught in her gaze, Perrin could make no answer. She nodded as if his silence were answer enough.
Now take me to Simeon.
The door to Loyal's room stood open, spilling a pool of candlelight into the hall. The two beds inside had been pushed together, and Loyal and Simeon were seated on the edge of one. The chinless man was staring up at Loyal with his mouth open, and an expression of wonder in his face.
Oh, yes, the studding are wonderful, Loyal was saying. There is such peace there, under the great trees. You humans may have your wars and strife, but nothing ever troubles the studding. We tend the trees and live in harmony.
He trailed off when he saw Moraine, with Lan and Perrin behind her. Simeon scrambled to his feet, bowing and backing away until he came up against the far wall.
Good mistress.
Even then, he continued bobbing like a toy on a string.
Show me to your brother, Moraine commanded, and I will do what I can. Perrin, you will come too, since this good man spoke to you first.
Lan lifted an eyebrow, and she shook her head.
If we all go, we might attract attention. Perrin can give me what protection I need.
Lan nodded reluctantly, then gave Perrin a hard look.
See that you do, blacksmith. If any